scheduled for 9:30, also listed on the red list. Friday already, and members received the notices via email, as well as the documentation. I wish everyone present in this room the best wishes for 2017. A difficult year, a busy year. But if every one of us to carry out our responsibility, we can make life a bit easier for all South Africans. That includes everyone in this country. Myself, my name is Charles de Beer. This is the first time that we engage with the city of Cape Town. As far as I know, I went back to the third parliament. It's the first time we are doing this. As the Select Committee for Finance, as well as the Select Committee for Appropriations. Mr. Wendel just went to fetch the agenda. The agenda will be that we first take the briefing by the National Treasury on the budget performance of the City of Cape Town. Immediately after that, briefing by the Provincial Treasury, also on the budget performance and support provided to the City of Cape Town, and then we will deliberate on that, then get into the presentation by the City of Cape Town Metro, by the Honourable Alderman Ian Nielsen, the Executive Deputy Mayor of Cape Town. Welcome to all of you. Very welcome in Parliament. Don't stretch. Relax. We're not here to fight with you. We are here to support each other to take South Africa forward. Then we will deliberate and close the meeting at 12:30 for a lunch break of 30 minutes. At 1 o'clock, the Select Committee for Appropriations will proceed with their agenda, forming part of our engagement with the Western Province, but specific Cape Town, and then en route to Saldanha to look at the development in that area, in that municipality as well. I'm going to give the opportunity to all the members to introduce themselves, that we know each other on my right hand side. Please use the mic.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. My name is Adama.
And from the Limpopo province, getting lots of rain today.
Good morning, and I'm Saifa Mohai. I am a member of the committee, also chair of the appropriations.
Yeah, the Honourable Mahar Bahai has got a history of serving the executive of the Free State Provincial Government. He adds value to this committee and to Parliament. And the other, on the lighter note, the cheetahs from the Currie Cup last year. He's very proud of that. And they're number one in terms of the matric results in South Africa as well.
good morning, colleagues and officials. I'm deputing the consolation, but also the consolation is my original name. It's not a name that I got after some time when I got educated in law, but even to me by my father. I am from the Platinum Province of Congo, living in Spokonego Pirima in my language, and in another language called Northwest, Northwest. That's the province where I come from. I'm a member of this committee, and I'm also a member of the Appropriation Committee. Good morning.
Our good lady who just entered.
Thank you. My name is Tissi Matala, a member of both the Finance and Appropriations Committee, Council party.
Thank you. The presenters, the team leaders will introduce the members on their presentation as they do it in terms of the agenda. Former members sometimes get the question, the NCOP, what are you doing when we're outside in the streets? Well, the media speak of Parliament and then they refer to the National Assembly as Parliament. Parliament's got two houses. What does the Constitution say? The NCOP in its committees is there to promote adherence to the principles of intergovernment, of cooperative government and intergovernmental relations. They set out in Chapter 3 of the Constitution. At the center of these constitutional imperatives is that the three spheres of government, national, provincial and local, must work in a cooperative manner and must coordinate their actions in their service to the people. That's the importance of the NCOP and the select committees in the NCOP. We are here today to engage with the City of Cape Town in terms of finance to look at the fiscal position. What is your revenue? What is your expenditure? What's your deficit? What is your surplus? What do you do with it? What's your liability? You've got a surplus, what are you doing with the surplus? That picture will give us the Appropriations Committee the entree to get deeper into matters like the MIG funding. In terms of the Division of Revenue Act we passed last year in 2016, the equitable share for the Western Cape was 2.536 billion rand, and on conditional grants, the etc. was 2.12 billion rand for a total of 4.5 billion rand. Total transfers totaled 6.7 billion rand. You had a surplus of about 4 billion, but liabilities totaling 9 billion. That's a snapshot in terms of the presentations that was emailed. What's our objective? Good governance, sound financial management, accountability, compliance with the Constitution, and compliance with the MFMA. If everyone just comply to this, we go national, the PFMA, we're going to have fewer problems, fewer challenges in terms of management, because that is the law. If you break the law, there must be consequences. Finish and club. The days of blah, 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 just listen to presentations, take a resolution and leave meetings, it's history. It's history. The people outside is expecting of us to do our best that they can get the best. Take the right decisions. Also looking at the IDP, how does the IDP and the budget speak to each other? You visit constituencies, the IDP is dealt with the community in one meeting, and then another meeting is the budget. But they don't address both at the same meeting. How does the IDP and the budget speak to each other? Yes. That's important. We're going to have also a difficult year in terms of economic growth. And we commend the Minister of Finance, the Deputy President that led our team to Davos, putting the case of South Africa. This country is open for business. We've got the 9-point plan, as stipulated by the Excellency, the President, in the Sona, in Parliament. So we are doing our best to give the best to to our people. With that short introduction, all the members, welcome. We've got one apology. It's an honorable Sir Blanche. He is in charge. There's an election tomorrow, by election. He's there. He sent a written apology. That's the only apology I received. Then we will be giving over to National Treasury. Two gentlemen, please introduce yourself and take the lead. You've got 30 minutes for your presentation. After 30 minutes, I'm going to stop you. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Templeton Power from the National Treasury. I work within the local government budget. I am not a student.
I'm Chandra Bhutti
from the National Treasury in a unit called the support program.
Sorry to interrupt. Honourable members, there is a problem with the IT. I attended the public hearing last week here on Wednesday. Of the standing committee was the same situation. So, and Parliament is trying to correct it. Please look at your hard copies. Also, in terms of the microphones on my left hand side, there's also challenges. We're using a roaming mic. Sorry for this interruption.
Once again, I'm Nishan Dragosi from the National Treasury, from a unit for the City Support Program.
Thank you, Sir President. In responding to the three that we have discussed, I to start on slide number 17 with regards to the city of Cape Town, that for the 2016-17, the allocation, total allocation for the city is 6.7 million, which is made of direct transfers of about 6.6 million and indirect transfers of 44 million, which the indirect transfers include capacity building. And then I'll then move over to slide number 19 to look at the city's cash flow, the surplus, and when one looks into the slide, we will notice that for the 2016 financial year, the city reported a surplus of about 4.3 billion. The 4.3 billion include the transfer, capital transfer, which are meant to be capital for infrastructure projects. And then when we look into the cash flow, we find that the city opened the year with a balance of 3.7 billion, which then increased to 2.8 billion at the end of the 2015-16 financial year. And asset management and liabilities. The city closed its total current assets, which includes debtors, that is communities that own the city money, the organs of state, and individual companies, which is about 12.2 billion. And the trade creditors for the city owns is about 9 billion. And when we look at the current asset ratio, for the 2015-16 financial year, it is 1.4 to 1, which is the national treasury requires about 1.5 to 2.1, which is slightly 0.1% below the 1.5, and it improved from the 2014-15 financial year, which in 2014-15 it was 1.3 to 1, which then means that the city has cash that can cover all the current liabilities that they are having, except that most of them from the short period has not been collected yet. And then I did one that moves into slide number 20. This, if you recall earlier on slide number 19, I spoke, I indicated that the 4.3 billion includes capital transfer. On slide number 20, if we look at the table on the right hand side, it indicates that the city has made an operating surplus of 3.2 billion. This is when we only look into the operating revenue and expenditure, including the capital expenditure. That is the reason why the 2.2 million is not on the 4 million that I reported earlier on. And then, again, I would indicate that the city's cash flow, when one we go into slide number 22, the analysis that we have done from 2012-2013 financial year, it indicates that the city has the cash and cash equivalent at the end of the year of about 4.9 billion. And that the cash has been declining from 4.9 billion in 2018 to 1.7 billion in projected 1.7 billion in 2018-19 according to the 2016-17 Amtrak budget that the city has submitted to the national budget. However, the spread for the 15-16 assigned indicated to 3.8 billion. What the city normally does is that they have long-term investment. Long-term investment that includes the sinking fund, and this is where like the city has bonds. Then the city on the long-term investment, this includes the sinking fund. That is the amount of cash that the city is kept aside to cover the repayment of bonds when they mature in the near future. Because when you look at it currently at this time, it is basically indicated that the city does not have the money. However, the money is tied to the borrowing that they have committed for over the long-term period. One of the strategies that the city utilizes on the cash management is the long-term financial plan and the long-term financial modeling. What they normally focus on is that they try to maximize the investment by getting a premium when they analyze their investment vis-a-vis their borrowing. And the key issue, again, if I may go to slide number 20, which talks about the operating surplus deficit, and also when we look on the graph on the left-hand side, we find that in the 2014 financial year, on the operating surplus deficit, the city was operated or recorded 24.4 million of surplus, and then the following year it was a deficit of 438.3 million. And when we look at the 2017 MTEP going forward, the city has projected operating deficit from 367 million to 372 million in 2017-18 financial year. What we encourage the city always is that they have to budget for the surplus. As is indicated on the table, that for the 14-15 and the 15-16 financial year, they reported 93.4% and 93.2% of the cost to income, which is the operating expenditure measured against the operating revenue, excluding capital transfers. This is where we would like to see the city operating, because what then the benefit becomes is that more cash is generated. And also is part of the implementation of the cost containment, as our minister has indicated that municipalities should implement the cost containment. Because it becomes more sustainable, because the city will then generate more cash to fund its capital, especially on the capital infrastructure, looking into things like the road infrastructure, and looking at saving services, which include the services, providing the services of open water, electricity, and refuse. And up to now, for the past 2 years, we have discussed with the city, we managed to get them to about the average of 93% of the cost to income ratio. Then, when one looks into the cash flow, again, as I indicated about the decline for about 1.7 million focused over the 16-17 and we also advise the city that they should put up a limit, for example, to say the city should not have a cash flow of less than 2 billion per annum. And this is again where we want to see not only the city of Cape Town, but also other cities, because the cities are the engine of growth. And then when one looks into the conditional grant, where I will not go much into that for the 15-16 financial year, the conditional grant on slide 23 that the city has requested, which we was rejected by the National Treasury, total about 161.1 million, which is made of the highest portion of that is the public transport network grant, which is about 128.9 million. And then now, with regards to the integration between the IDP and the budget, what we will always do with all the non-delegated municipalities, which is all the metros and the secondary cities, we link, when we do the analysis, we link the budget, the IDP, the special development framework, the medium-term strategic framework, and the NDP to test whether they align to the national priorities. And where the problems are misalignment, then we put it in our report, we recommend to the city and offices that they need to make improvement on their planning. And for both parents, for that, I'll request Michelle to mm-hmm. report.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Chief.
We have so what is the things that we do as the National Treasury is that we drive a city support program that focuses on transforming the city space in order to, in an understanding that this is a huge stumbling block to economic development within our metro. And the city support program supports the city in terms of understanding its economic development potential, but then certainly in terms of the human resource, the human settlement work, as well as public transport work that is needed to transform our city spaces, and runs a number of programmatic support areas to support our cities in that. But noting very well that underlying the use of housing and human settlements as well as public transport to transform our cities relies on good management within our metro, and we drive a governance component to our program that's aimed at ensuring that our cities are well governed, that they have the right financial systems in place and the right budgetary processes, as well as the fact that they are engaging with citizens in the private sector in being able to run a spatial transformation program to change the shape and form of our cities. So in a nutshell, that's what the city support program does. And the key instruments that we work with our cities through is something called the Built Environment Performance Plan, which is quite an important planning instrument where our cities identify spatially where they want to target their investment to be able to transform the city and identify these corridors of investment. And thereafter identify the appropriate catalytic projects that can be located within those spaces to be able to start to play a transformative role, particularly in bringing transport and urban development and housing a lot closer, being a common challenge that our cities face. So our cities produce this BEP every year, and they are also evaluated in terms of the social environment performance plan. As part of the process that Templeton was articulating is that we also review the performance of city use in terms of the mid-year review and what we call a benchmarking engagement during the course of the year. We've just come out of the mid-year review of the city of Cape Town, which was conducted last week on Thursday and Friday. And so I have quite a fresh understanding and engagement with the city about its performance, as well as how that is geared towards transforming the city space, ensuring that it's targeting investment and on capital investment in those identified priority areas that we work with.
Okay, thank you very much for that. And as you were talking about the transformation of the city planning, when we look into slide number 21, this is one of the areas that we are driving all the metros, especially the metros, that they must not be grant dependent. If we look at the table below, you'll find that on the capital funding structure, under transfer recognized capital, this is national grant for infrastructure. We see that in between 2012-18 to 2014-15, the city depended from the national treasury for fund capital expenditure, it was about 2.3%. Now, when we look into the 2015-16 financial year, it has gone down to about 39.8% current dependence. And then the city for the 2016-17 it has brought it down again to 37.6%. In the very same meeting that we had in Richmond with the city last week, Thursday, Friday, we also recommended that the city should at least be still go down to about 25%, because we, as the engines of growth, we expect cities to be less reliant on the national transfer in terms of capital expenditure.
There we go. Are there any matters as the national treasury that you want to tell us in terms of your concerns? We've seen the presentations we received last year when we dealt with the provincial treasuries. National treasury has a page on concerns, things to look at and be addressed. Are there any matters that you want to indicate to us?
The key one that I indicated was first of all on the operating surplus. Which the city that you also see on slide 20 that the surplus, operating surplus is at a deficit, so averaging about 200 million. And on the graph hand, I indicated that for the 14-15, we managed to get them to an operating surplus and not a deficit. This is the key one that we are asking the city to adhere to. The second one, also we re-emphasized it on last week, Thursday, Friday, was that in their strategic project program that they are driving, they should include informal settlement in their planning. So that when projects normally become catalytic, they should also include informal settlement.
Thanks, Chair. If I can just follow on to that, one of the other things that you picked up with the City of Cape Town is about their expenditure on capital projects. However, the City of Cape Town performs just under what is the norm for expenditure on capital projects, which is about 90%, and I think that they missed that marginally this year with its 89.4% expenditure on their capital program. The city has acknowledged the many issues that contributed towards that, and the great difficulty in ensuring delivery on a large capital program at the size and scale of the city of Cape Town, but has identified a key mechanism to be able to start to address that, which we are keenly watching. And certainly, one of those is about better portfolio and program management. That sets up a pipeline of capital infrastructure projects and ensures that through better portfolio management they are able to deliver on the capital program. And noting as well that there have been issues around supply, around contractors that have underperformed on certain contracts, but there are mechanisms by which to improve and quality assure their service providers to be able to deliver on the fund list, particularly with nationally, the national supplier database, making sure that it can properly vet contractors that have aired in other municipalities, that those are quite important contributing factors to being able to deliver well on the capital program. So while the CFK Fund has just missed the benchmark for capital expenditure, we are relatively confident that it is engaging with some of the reasons underlying that and adopting quite impressive portfolio management techniques in line with a system that we've been developing at National Treasury called the City Infrastructure and Delivery Management System, which is meant to be able to speed up infrastructure delivery and make sure that it is managed at the level of portfolio management, and effectively that supply chain management process are designed for very effective delivery of infrastructure projects. City of Cape Town's been participating in that. So I'm confident that there is an analysis of what are some of those things that can improve capital expenditure and that's what's being implemented by the city. And just on a note, a final note from ourselves as well, we would like to encourage members of the select committee to also utilize our the portal that's been created called Municipal Money. It's available on www.municipalmoney.gov.za, which is the open data portal that Treasury has set up with all the financial information of all the municipalities as the quarterly reporting that comes in and gives an ongoing analysis of certain key indicators for each municipality. And we encourage them to use that.
Okay.
Just
lastly, the key to operating this is that it influences the cash flow. And the last 2 years they managed to improve. However, while if the city continues on the operating deficit, as we have seen on the slide 22, that they projected to that the cash flow is going down, that indicated that they have long-term borrowing that covers their liabilities. The challenge is that if they don't operate on the surplus, they may have a challenge in meeting financial obligations in the near future. And some of the recommendations and conclusions that we included them in the benchmark report when we analyzed the budget, which I believe the city of Cape Town, I'm not sure if they have already shared with the committee, because that document is also important because we analyzed the city as a whole. Thanks.
You done? Thank you. We recognize the two members that entered a bit later in the meeting. Can they please introduce themselves? In the front row, where the sun rises.
From the kingdom province, the wind demanded from the representing KwaZulu-Natal,
sunrise is at 28 minutes past 4 in the morning.
Good morning, thank you, Chairperson. Yes, my name is Farad Isaac. I come from Kumbalanga. I just want to apologize, Chairperson, I was a few minutes late, but my flight only got in at about 5:09. A bit of a rush to get in there in time. But yes, thank you, and I'm happy to be here.
Thank you to the honourable members. We recognize also the presence of the Ministry, the Finance Office is present here, and our staff members are also here. Honourable members, I just received two apologies. One is from the honourable MEC for the Provincial Minister, but MEC for Finance in the Western Cape, honourable Dr. Meyer. He's got prior commitments, and also from the Honourable Executive Mayor de Lille, as represented by the Deputy Executive Mayor. This just appears in our minutes. Honourable members, that takes us to our second presentation by the Provincial Treasury on the budgetary performance and support provided to the City of Cape Town, Mr. Yakal and Mr. Johannes. That's the names I received from the department. Please proceed. 30 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair, and to the honourable members. My name is Angela Takala. I'm from the Department of Treasury of the King. I'm with my colleague, Alfred Mahanis, from the Department of the King Treasury. Chair, I'm going to present the figures as of the second quarter of the MFA financial year, that is as of the 31st of December. So, these figures are hot off the press, and what we'll be highlighting if you look at the outline on page 2. We'll look at the summary of year-to-date budget performance on the 31st of December. We'll also compare operating revenue as compared to the budget performance, the capital budget, and also we'll look at the data. We've got responsibility based on the MFA, that is to ensure that the operation itself of the province for the MFA, And also, the city of Cape Town is one, even now the city of Cape Town, in terms of the delegation, is delegated to National Treasury for monitoring and administrative oversight. However, it's part of the municipality that we are looking after as well. So we do play a supporting role, being guided also by National Treasury. Chair, if I can just go to the numbers in terms of page 7 of the presentation, you'll find that as of the 31st of December, the city of Cape Town with an operating budget of 34.4 billion. After the adjusted budget, 34.9 billion. In terms of year to date, the budget for year to date is 17.5 billion. The actual expenditure level for revenue, for the level of revenue of year last, is 18.2 billion rand. So in terms of the budget today, it was put 52% of the budget. So I can say that the revenue that they're generating, they are the direct of 200 million. So they are overperforming in terms of their revenue realizing. In terms of the total expenditure, they've got a total expenditure of 30, the budget is 34.7 billion rand. Year to date, the actual year to date performance for the expenditure is sitting at 15.2 billion rand. And the budget was at 16.1 million rand. So there's a variance of 855 million. So I think there's a nice spread in terms of 52 to 44% in terms of the split based on expenditure based on the revenue. Now, in terms of the surplus deficit, the city has budgeted for a surplus of 275 million. I think it's as indicated by the city is budgeting on a deficit. However, if you look at the realization of that surplus, the city realized a surplus of 2.9 billion, which is encouraging, and because they budgeted year to date for a surplus of 1.4 billion. In terms of transfer of recognized capital, and those are your grants. The original budget was 2.1 billion rand. The city year to date actual expenditure on capital grants is 835 million rand. And the budget was 529 million rand. So they're also performing in terms of the overall grant expenditure for the second quarter. Also, that's in terms of the data. The city's data is sitting at 7.5 billion. I will talk about the data later on in the presentation. The total outstanding creditors as of the 31st of December million. I'll also talk to you later on during the presentation. If you can go to slide 8, the operating budget performance of the city. The city is well on track in terms of their budget, operating revenue budget. As we indicated, that they're currently at 52.2% to the total adjusted budget. However, while they are on track, we have noted an underperformance in terms of the revenue that is derived from fines. And also, yes, just below here, the pie graph that we just started demonstrating in terms of the fact that the city has realized to date 50.5% of their revenue from service charges, 22% from their property rates. They have recognized 7% from their transfer on operational grants. Can go to slide number 9. In terms of operating expenditure performance, the city is sitting at 44.44% based on the adjusted budget, and the amount is 34.9 billion, as indicated. While we must note also that yesterday's performance on transfer and grants reflects an underspending and sitting at 36.7%. We are raising that the concern that we picked up, and or just that below is just a spread in terms of the revenue of the expenditure spread. If you can go to the next slide, Chair, which is slide number 10, where we talk about the capital performance. In terms of the funding by the source of funding. The government is contributing 2 billion from the city, The cities here today, across spending is at 810 million, while they were supposed to, the budget that they budgeted to the start will have spent one billion. Also, on September, the provincial grant that was allocated to the city was 97.9 million. The city, year to date, has spent 24.5 million, and the budget that they said that they would spend was around about 53.6 million. In terms of their own contributions, public contributions, the city budgeted that they will spend 87 million on terms of their contributions that come from the developers. Year to date, it's at 34.9 million. The budget was supposed to be that. They are on track in terms of the budget as well. The year to date capital expenditure amounts to 34.2%. And also, what we do, Chairperson, as the provincial treasury, we track on that of the top 10 capital projects. And the city, for the whole of the province, and the city got significant amount of those 10 projects, and they are currently on track in terms of expenditure of those projects. If you can go to the data, the slide number 11, the total outstanding data for the city is sitting at 7.5 billion rand, and the most significant data comes from water services and property rates. I'll also speak on the paper on the water services based on the outstanding debt. The total outstanding debt over 90 days is sitting at 5.3 billion rand, which equates to around 70% of the total accredited data book. In terms of the comparison, in terms of month to month, the city, while we're looking at the decrease in terms of month to month comparison in terms of the data, and also there's a decrease of 5.1% to compare to the year to year. However, Chair, we just need to note the fact that the city with the restriction level that they put in place, they've realized more revenue. I think the issue that we also wanted to highlight is the fact that the recoverability of that revenue that they have realized, seeing the effect that the water services is contributing a lot in terms of the total data. If you can go to the next slide, which is the creditor, slide number 12. We do check all the creditors, and we can say that the city has got the capacity to meet all its obligations. The total payables as at the 31st of December was sitting at 256.6 million rand. Now, if you look at the fact that there's a negative variance amount of 7.1 million, that one is based on the dispute that is currently there and the legal issue that is being driven by the city. In terms of the cash flow, as the National Treasury has indicated, the city's cash flow as of the 31st of December, in terms of cash and cash equivalents, they budgeted to be sitting at 1.3 billion rand. They are actually today at 1.3 billion rand. They did budget year to date for 2.8. So they've got a variance of 1.4 billion in terms of the year to date. So their monthly cash coverage ratio is sitting at 1 to 2. So the city has, based on their application, they do have the capacity to meet its liabilities. Because the cash inflows, they do exceed the cash outflows. In terms of the closing balance on investment portfolio, the city is sitting at 9.8 billion rand as of the 30th of December. The closing balance indicates an amount of 6.5 billion rand as of December, which includes your sinking fund in terms of the what Templeton has indicated that the city for the sinking fund is committed in terms of their long-term amortization of their long-term debt. I'll allow my colleague to take us through the supporting programs that the city is currently
doing. Honourable Chairperson and members, just in terms of some of the board initiatives, as you know, in May we reported that we've got basically two processes. The one relates to the LGM check, where we looked in terms of the financial health position within municipalities, and in support to some of the findings that we've observed we've read about in terms of publishing some economic intelligence in terms of assisting municipalities in compiling policy instruments, for example, the fourth generation IEP, as well as the budget formulation. So that is a, the city is also included. So on a, in September, our MEC has published the Municipal Economic Review and Outlook. And on the slide, I've just indicated some of the information that is contained. And I brought two copies also with for the members. It contains, for example, an overview or review of some of the economic activity per region, provides some information in terms of comparative advantage, in terms of sectorial growth, the employment, as well as the skills that in turn would also influence in terms of some of the regular modeling. We've also provided some infrastructure spending analysis because we acknowledge the importance that infrastructure investment plays towards economic growth within municipalities. And lastly, there's also a chapter in terms of the socioeconomic reality. So these publications are issued per region for all the districts in the province, including the metro. Leading to that, the next slide covers the socioeconomic profile, and that is just a breakdown. And again, those are part issued to each municipality in the province, including the city of Cape Town. The next slide, that obviously, as I've indicated, is in support to the integrated development plan that all municipalities are currently busy preparing, and in so doing, it also alleviates or assists with some of the fiscal constraints that our municipalities are encountering in not incurring additional expenditure in terms of gaining economic intelligence to support the policy environment. Next slide, in terms of some of the other support packages, is the Municipal Governance Review and Outlook, and I've just cited some of the work streams that this province is currently working with the City of Cape Town. The one relates to budget and treasury office capacitation and development, where we work hand in hand in terms of particularly ensuring compliance with the minimum competency regulations for senior management as well as other finance officials. As well, and then linked to that is also building the next pipeline of finance officials within the industry. To that end, do we have a partnership or working with the City of Cape Town in terms of customizing the industry guidelines so that it could attract a wide pool of people, and we are really proud to share with the community in terms of how that has also been rolled out in other districts in terms of customizing, in terms of providing further guidance, in terms of the mentorship, as well as the lock that needs to be in place in terms of the rotation for our interns. Then in terms of revenue management, we are working with the city in terms of reducing the government debt owed to the City of Cape Town, notwithstanding some of the challenges that is encountered in terms of the devolution process, in terms of service charges increases in our, for example, the norms and standards. We have technical tasks, and if matters cannot resolve between the administration, those get elevated in terms of the political office bearers to get involved. Then we also be part of the e-services that the city has rolled out, and some of our provincial departments have also been pilots in terms of that activity. On the expenditure management side, we've worked together with the city in terms of the formulation of an expenditure management charter, and that obviously ties in with the adherence to cost containment, but more importantly, also looking into areas of allocated efficiencies, and some of those lessons that are obviously being rolled out with in our secondary cities in the province, as well as the other local authorities. In terms of its implementation, it was the implementation of the central supplier database, assistance with the registration of suppliers, to ensure compliance in that regard. Then we also, in terms of the built environment performance plan, that the chamber, in terms of the city support program, has alluded to, in terms of assistance as well as providing information in terms of the provincial investment in the city, and ensuring integration and alignment between the various capacity projects that both this province as well as the city is embarking upon. Then, Honourable Chairperson covers in essence some of the support initiatives that the province is doing in the city of Cape Town. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. thank you to the National and Provincial Treasuries, the people also in the time frames from the members. Are there any questions or clarity once we're going to listen to the City of Cape Town? This was a view from the two treasuries. We're going into the nitty-gritty now when the Metro presents. Are there any questions to the National and Provincial Treasury? None? Honorable Mr. Shupi?
And why 75? Is it because of poor planning? Is my little analysis of that. On the same slide, on page 23, you are alluding to the fact that public transport reported 54% in the 52 to 78%. That's a bullet point. Are you with me? If you can explain it. On slide 25. When you speak about the provincial transfer, which is implementing the revenue enhancement initiative, and you mentioned the field, Treasure Bear, Matikama, and all those municipalities. What comes to my mind when I look at this is that these municipalities that are mentioned here were experiencing credit control programs, and as far as there had to be an intervention, and what is the state of the municipalities today, these municipalities in particular, after the implementation of the revenue enhancement strategy. When you go to the other point where you see the city of Cape Town, you say, second bullet point, SEL tenders are not considered for awarded to tenders who own the city. It's a good thing, very positive. They don't give tenders to people who own the city. But I find the contradiction again when the payment to suppliers are withheld from those who owe the city. It means tenders are given to those who owe. In terms of this bullet point, that you don't give tenders to those who owe, but then you say payment to suppliers are withheld from those who owe the fee. Do you understand the contradiction? Yes. Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mr. Shipping. That question is also then directed to the City of Cape Town because they are executing the implementation of the budget and the actions that go with it. Any other member? Vice Chancellor of Provincial Treasury?
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, my apology for not coming there because that's why I'm an honorable member. But I wanted to raise the concern that we have in terms of the data. For example, I've indicated in the first slide that the city, in terms of the realization of the revenue, they are overperforming, which is excellent. Especially in their property rate. When we had their engagement last Friday, even in the only position to say that going forward they will even do their valuation on an annual basis, which is quite significant for a municipality to change how we do things going forward, which is commendable. However, the issue now is that we are raising that revenue. Now the issue that we are raising is the collectability of that revenue based on the economic situation. For example, with the water services, they've increased the revenue for water services based on the penalty that has been levied on the level 3 restriction. Now the question that we are having is that, based on the fact that significant amount of your data owed is coming from property rates and water services, the capacity of the city to be able to collect that money. But now currently we raise the revenue, there is another issue to be able to collect that cash. So that's something that we raised as a city during the engagement process. The city got a very robust and innovative revenue management strategy that they put in place. I'm sure that we talk to you maybe we're interested in this. But we're giving some comfort that they will be able to implement. So that we can actually choose to realize the possibility of that. The quality of the general policy in place that takes into consideration the initiative. I was raising the issue of the concern in
terms of that, it's good to start to raise the revenue base of the penalty, but it's another issue to be able to collect for the economic contribution of the penalty.
Okay, so, that's all my understanding.
Please go up. Please use your mic on the member.
The water and the property rate, you say the debt goes for over 90 days. And you are alluding to the fact that they are overperforming. Overperforming would then imply to me that if the account would not go over a period of 90 days. If indeed I take your statement, thank you.
Fine, you can proceed.
Okay, thank you. Maybe another member, let me explain it this way. You remember the municipality work on an accrual basis. So, for example, you have a property rate valuation law. Now, you need to be able to raise that rating in terms of the billing. Now, the city is doing exceptionally well in terms of raising that rating. However, when they presented, their collision rate was sitting at 93%. So now, while they are raising the revenue, they are paying. However, now the concern is that the 93% collection rate won't be able to realize to turn that revenue, that billing into cash. That's why you find that the water services and the property are not going to be coming from. I think that the issue that you raised in terms of the data, what we're doing, engagement that we're talking about. The city, we have initiated a committee, a debt management committee, where the office of the CFO in the city, in the city of Cape Town, and our office, we sit on a monthly basis with minutes and targets. Because what we are saying is that we don't want the provincial department to be owing it. Because before we start to print about payment, charity to keep at home, we're saying that our own government department can afford the city. And that is where we meet on a monthly basis to be able to ensure that, and we call all the other, the CFOs of those departments to be able to explain and make commitments based on that. And for example, the issue that we had was the Department of Education, where the city was very robust and to say that they are going to cut. So we had to intervene and make the Department of Education committee to say that by the end of February, they will pay 28 million of that. So that is the intervention that we are talking about when we talk about the engagement. It's in a normal, it's in an IGR format with decision making powers in terms of who attends that meeting. In terms of the critical as well, we track it, especially not only for the future case stuff, but for the also especially with the ESCOM account and the other general account. So we try to say to ensure that we are servicing those communities and including the other general. So that's why we are able to speak on the fact that the dispute and the dispute is being handled at the legal process. So that is what we are doing in terms of the engagement that we're talking about. It's in a structured format between ourselves and the city department in order to ensure that we manage the debt and assisting the system to realize the fact that we reduce the debt to not only to account the account.
National Treasury.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think the issue of water and property rates, I think provincial president answered it very well. It's like when I borrow you $1,000 to pay me within 2 months, but after 2 months only paid 100 grand. Then the 9 cents cannot collect. That's what you are talking about. Now with regards to the borrowing, as I indicated that we are encouraging metros that they should average about 25% of the national account. And if I understood your question was if you borrow the increase or expenditure.
when remember when you borrow as well, the issue then becomes that you are able to attract certain developer or infrastructure improvement. And secondly, also again now taking the fiscal challenges that the country has, that very much tight. And again, the third one is that when municipalities do not spend, as we have indicated that we have not approved around 128 million of conditional grants. So it is far much better for cities that they should be in control of their own financial applications or funding towards their capital expenditure. Not only cities, but all municipalities, only those that have the capacity to borrow. Because one of the areas that we look at is we measure the borrowing as a percentage of the total revenue, that to what extent the capacity that he has to borrow. And then the other one was on why is city spending 25% of conditional grants, and then the city, and then on the city, I indicated on bullet 3, 54%, and the city, yes, the city presented 78%. As I indicated, if you look into that, I indicated that during the media, the processes that we also take at the national treasury is like when we present on what the cities submit to the national treasury for the local government database. Then at the end of the financial year, once the audit has been completed, then we have what we call the verification of audited financial statements. That's when we request all municipalities nationally to submit information that has been audited. That process starts around January, and which means that the 28% is then what it has been audited, which currently has been submitted. Normally the process ends around February for all municipalities. Then we have 100% figures that agree on the exact database and the audited financial statement. Then we record it to compile that. And then there is the issue on revenue management. What is the status now? I think on that one, I have requested for the chapter that because they engage a lot on them. Because if you look at, I think, slide number 5, and what the provincial treasury presented, that from the delegation, the minister delegated to the provincial treasury, or quite a number of municipalities, the national treasury retained metro and the other cities. And the city is assisting, as they said, they're supporting us with regard to also the city of Cape Town. So I think they have turned around as well. On the issue of saying that the city does not give tender to those who owe the city, and those that owe the house is all the payment. What basically happens is that, for example, if a company receives a project and then for some reason then stops paying for whatever unknown reason, that means the city will then say, okay, you have not paid, which is one of the revenue strategies. So then you miss maybe that month's payment or 2 months payment before we pay you, then pay us our money. But now what is important here is, as part of their due diligence, when you apply, the first thing for them to say, you may pay your husband taxes. And this is, again, the first entry point. And with regards to, I think on the, why they are not spending 100%, as I indicated, I think you will go a bit more with regards to the training. And that's why we are helping the city of Cape Town, and not only Cape Town, all the metros. And we are rolling this out for the secondary cities, which is like the George here in the Western Cape, so that they should, because we are trying to address the issue of budget informing the plan. But we need to have the plan coming up front and the budget supporting the plan. That's what we are trying to try.
Thank you, Councillor. Yeah, so in response, just to add a little bit more detail to why the city is not spending as much as it could be on its capital expenditure, the analysis that we understand from the city is that some of the reasons for that are that the long appeal period after a tender is awarded, before a contractor can start work in terms of supply chain management regulation, has been a hindrance in terms of the extended period for that. Four appeals in which the contractor has to wait before they start work. protracted negotiations for the acquisition of land, particularly where land is involved in those projects. They've experienced problems with certain cases, poor contractor performance. They've also experienced disruptions on the construction side and labor related disruptions, together with the community unhappiness about the particular project. So many of these reasons, and the reason that they provide now is the length of environmental impact assessments as well, and the period that's required for that, as well as for water use license sectors. Also, there's been an issue in terms of that coming up in a number of development projects. Much of this can be planned for and better managed. And I think that program and portfolio management system that we want to improve amongst all our cities, and the DFK China in particular is one of those, and we're doing that through the city infrastructure delivery and management system. And the Cape Town has adopted a program and portfolio management system that is certainly one that is going to improve the way it is able to plan for, coordinate projects, and ensure that before the project comes under capital budget, it has passed a robust screening test before it is ready to be on the budget. So that what is in the budget is ready to be delivered in a way. But together with that, as well, it's also improving certain practices around citizen engagement and working with community in the community planning of projects and making sure that it meets community needs. This is something that we're also working with the city on as the city support program to improve the methodology that the city starts to utilize in major infrastructure change and the way in which it engages the citizens. And certainly this is a set of practices that we're wanting to improve across all metros. So we think that there's a holistic approach being taken to try to ensure that capital expenditure is better and that the city is spending 90% or more in future years.
Lastly, Chair, from the beginning when you spoke also to say the future Berkshire, what happened to it, as I indicated that we do the in-depth analysis on the benchmark, which again the city has the report that I can share with you. On page 35 of the report, especially for the 2017 financial year, the city was receiving just only equitable share of about 2 billion. And the total cost of providing the three basic services is projected 2.1 billion, which is about the equitable share provided to the city. Out of that, household must receive the three basic services. We are looking at about 1.1 billion, and then energy is about 386, and also we are looking at around the ratios removal that is done for the indigenous to about 235, which comes back to the 2.1 billion. So the information is on the benchmark report that we wrote from the National Treasury, and they can share with the members for the project.
Thank you, you're done? Brilliant. That brings us to the presentation of the members by the Honorable Nielsen, Executive Deputy Mayor of Cape Town. You've got time until 10 to 12, sir, to take us through what's very important, Honorable Members, ladies and gentlemen. As stated by His Excellency the President, the Minister of Finance, the Minister of Economic Development, is the economic growth in our cities. There's a positive economic growth in the cities, it enhances economic growth in the country. Another reality is immigration. People are moving from one province to the other province. That pushes pressure on the budget of like the Department of Health, like the Department of Education. The budget is the expression of economic objectives. Very important point. Mission, over to you. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair, the brief that was given to us to come to present today was slightly different to the debate that we've had until now. with the brief that is given out to come to speak on the local economic development strategy, integrated development plan implementation, and responsiveness of the city budget to the NDP plan. And that's what my presentation will be. But yes, but I think that before I proceed on that, Mr. Chair, if you allow me, I think I need to respond to the discussion up to now on some of the specifics around the budget numbers per se. So, if we start with the issue of the capital spending, you know, we agree fully that 89% is not good enough. That we have to get this 95% is the kind of number we need to be achieving, that we just have to do better. As you heard from National Treasury, the city is putting into place a process, a project management process, which seeks now to ensure that we have a better result in the end, because the real problems lie quite often before project starts. The inadequate preparation that's done, that project managers sometimes come along and ask for the money to be put on the budget, and they're not actually ready to spend that money. Well, they're not quite close enough. And as you've heard, the other issues that arise during contracts, such as the appeals process on the awards, sometimes can be stretched out by a very litigant appellant. We can also have problems during the construction period of mentioned already, contractor performance, community adherence, and so on. But these also are areas that we could do better in terms of trying to preempt. So if it was better to engage before the contract, one could reduce the possibilities of such problems. And also the correct selection of a contractor. Now, we can't always get it right around the appointment of contractors, because when you come to the evaluation, everything looks great on paper, they are going well, you appoint them, and then they suddenly get another contract with another government somewhere and something else, and suddenly they're overstretched, and, 6 months into the project, they're just unable to deliver, because they now have got too much work. Or that something goes wrong on another contract and suddenly their financial situation deteriorates, not on our contract, but on something else, and then they're not able to deliver on our contract. So these are the kind of things that you've got to manage throughout these processes. So we're also looking to improving the ongoing project and contract management as well, to ensure that we get better. As I said, we are ourselves not satisfied with our current delivery, and we are determined to improve that situation. The comments, the Honourable Member's question around what he saw as a contradiction, I think again it's an issue of the different fine spots. At the time of awarding tenders, we don't give a tender to someone who's not. So they will be coming and they'll pay and they'll make sure they're up to date. But again, 6 months into the contract, they might have by that stage now fallen behind in their payment to the city. And that's the point where we come and say, well, we now, owe you R1 million on this contract, but you owe R500,000, so we're only going to give you R500,000. So we ensure that during the contract, we then manage that situation as well. We don't only do it at the time of contract award. Quite a bit of comment was made here around cash flow. I mean, we agree fully. Cash flow is perhaps the biggest risk in municipalities in South Africa. That is, I think, the municipalities have looked very strongly at having a balanced budget. But, it's one thing to build, but another thing to collect the money. And in the end, the issue is how much money is in the bank. That's the issue in the end. If you don't get that right, then things are not going to be good. So So cash flow is the critical test at the end of the process to say that was all worth. Not the balanced budget, that's one part, that's the cash. Have you got the cash flow? Now, National Treasury has its norms that they use. They say what was between 2 and 3 months of your turnover, you should have the cash in the bank. I think it's a good general norm. But, you know, we have taken a different approach where we say, well, let's go back to the basics. And what we do is a daily cash flow trajectory. And we then make sure that, for example, those things that need to be cashed back, for example, our insurance fund, the housing fund, the money that we receive, grant funding that we receive from province or national, that is yet to be spent. That must be cashed back. You know, we must now have spent that cash on something else. What are we there for when we spend it on what it was intended for? So, if one manages on that basic level, we believe that we have a very good cash flow control, and so we can run down at lower levels than the 2 to 3 months. And that's why we sit at the moment at 1.2 months, because we run on that basis. So, you know, for example, we have 2 big payments, particularly every month, our salary bill, 37th of the month every month, around R1 billion now, close to that, and the Eskom bill, which is around the 15th of the month. And in winter, that can be over R1 billion a month. So, you know, we protect these things and we manage them very well. Now, what we've also put into place is that we have, for the last few years, looked to go to the market to borrow more cash, because our borrowings are at a relatively low level at this moment in time. And we've got that provision ready to go. We can go to the market at any point that we need to go to the market. But we've deliberately held back. Because we've managed our cash in the bank has been more than we projected at the beginning of the financial year. All the way through. So it wasn't necessary for us to go to the market to get that money. Why borrow money when you don't actually need it? You know, you're not actually spending at the rate. So all the, you know, the income is better, whatever it might be. But what we did is that we have been delayed going to the market. And we're still ready to go. We want to now go through with a green bond to the market, probably during the course of the. But what we've also arranged is a R1 billion overdraft facility in government that we can call on at any time. So essentially, that 1.2 months worth of cash, you actually have to add the R1 billion to of that, the cash that's actually available to us at any moment in time to do a full assessment of where we are. So, you know, I think again, one must look at cash flow management in much greater depth to understand those circumstances. National Treasury raised the concern around our operating surplus, that there was a deficit. Well, I think the important thing is that one should not look at that surplus deficit in one financial year only. One needs to look over the entire period of the entry, because some years it could be a deficit and other years it could. You know, there are shifting circumstances. And so when one does an analysis, one should be, say, look at those overall. I mean, agree fully that overall you must generate. Because if you don't generate those surpluses, you don't have the cash to put into your capital replacement reserve, you don't have, you know, cash generally to drive any capital expenditure. And that's really where those surpluses should be going back to. National Treasury also mentioned around informal settlements. Well, we agree fully that there needs to be a good focus on informal settlements. And in the city, it's not just informal settlements, it's also the backyard. I think that to a large extent are the forgotten people in this country, and they need just as much attention as people in informal settlements. But I think the key issue is this.
we keep saying we want to change our land use form from the apartheid land use model, and we do agree on that other thing. And the trouble is, when you, if you just spend money on where people are living, you are simply reinforcing the apartheid land use model. You're keeping people where they are, rather than changing the form. So it's important when you engage on this, not only to ensure that you look after, provide services to inform the settlements, but you don't just run a program of saying, well, every single encampment settlement is going to be developed into a housing project, because then we're not changing the form. We've actually got to drive another housing program that actually begins to shift those incidents and moves people closer to where they to where they work and other opportunities are. So it's a much more complex approach that needs to be required in addressing it.
Excuse me, Honorable Milson, use your hand. I recognize Honorable Mohai.
Thank you very much. The difficulty is to, without that, the Honorable Member will lead up into the presentation. But it means in general comment on some of the issues. If we can speak to the text, let's discuss that, let's follow on what is it that we're discussing. Rather than making in general comment, I'm struggling here. I don't know whether I do this in order. Remember, I'm just speaking now.
Thank you, Mr. Mohai. There will be ample time for questions. And the team noted the questions. Should you get down? Maybe you can react to that at the end of your presentation when we come to deliberations. Just for a matter of a time issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we have adequate time to get through the presentation. As I said before I started, I believe because the stuff in the presentation did not address these particular issues that National and Provincial Treasury addressed, it was necessary for me to initially address those before I got my
presentation. So you
can
go directly
on. So I'm almost complete with these other comments. So Provincial Treasury's comments around the revenue to date, 52%, so we're doing better than projected. It's a little bit too soon to make that conclusion because we've been through the general valuation last year and there are still appeals on many of the valuations. So that 52% might not in the end turn out to be what it is. It might be a slightly lower number once we've dealt with all the objections. That should be completed soon. There was a lot of discussion around the debtors. Certainly the city has for many years now had collection rates of around 96%. And this but it varies across the different services. So for example, electricity we get 99 to 100% collection. Simply because three quarters of our city are on prepayment, electricity prepayment meters, and so we get the money from that. The great difficulty is on the water side, and that is largely attributed, I believe, to the fact that much of that debt sits amongst the poorer consumers in the city, but also that on poverty rates. We also achieve very good overall collection rates of around 99%. I think it's important when we reflect on percentages as to what we reflect on the numbers that were presented by by Provincial Treasury were the total arrears, which were over a number of years. It's not doesn't include a snapshot view of what's happening right now. And I think there was quite a bit of on the National Treasury slide about the actions that the city is taking to address the whole debtor issue. We have now linked all these prepayment meters to particular urban. They were not previously linked. We are now able to use the purchase of their prepayment electricity as a means to collect debt. So So if you go and buy 100 grand worth of electricity, you might only get 80 grand worth of other 50 grand those people will produce. And so that's the kind of approach that we are now taking. So I think, Mr. Chair, those are general comments around the two previous presentations. I could speak much more, but perhaps if we can then get into the presentation that I have. So, as I said, we were asked to come and speak on the local economic development strategy, integrated development plan implementation, and our responsiveness to the national development plan objectives. The way I'm going to present the results or present to you is in the top of the reverse order of those particular issues. So I think it flows better to understand our circumstances. So everything that we do flows from our IDP. It's the adoption of the IDP which determines then what we do. It determines what our budget is, it determines what we measure against in the end. So the first issue really is the question, I believe, if we want to link the NDP objectives to our budget, is the question is the NDP, is our IDP linked to the NDP? So in the slide, the first few slides in the presentation, we've taken you through the NDP chapters and how we have linked those to our IDP. So, for example, facilitate economic growth. On the IDP, there's the need to create an enabling environment to attract investment and so on. I won't address each and every one, but they're there in the presentation for you. Here's the next. So, go over the next slide, please. So the question is, how have we performed this? We've been very strongly linked our IDP to NDP. This previous term of office, which IDP, which is now coming to an end at the end of June, we are in the process right now of putting together the new term of office IDP, but that's not yet adopted by council. That will be adopted by at the end of May. For implementation on the 1st of July. But if we just look at the results of the previous period, again, Mr. Chair, it's unfortunate to find here because we have just completed our annual report, which is not yet printed. I have an online version here that I want you to know, which I should show you. But just some key numbers. Out of the performance of the city the last few years in terms of the IDP. So we have now 13 years of unqualified audit from the Auditor General, and we've had 4 consecutive years of clean audits, and in fact there was a 5th year back in 1999 as well. So I do believe that our financial numbers are highly credible. And obviously, you know, 4 years of clean audit says that our reporting on our predetermined objectives and our compliance with legislation, the AG accounts in policy. So one of the major projects that we've been running out in the city in the last year is our MyCity public transport system. That's a very significant funding from national government through the public transport grants have enabled the rollout of this public transport system, and I think now, as you see here, we have in 3 years have 18 million passenger trips on this, and we're now running around 1.5 million passenger trips a month on my trip. So we continue to roll that out. We've also made a major effort on EPWP in terms of our IDP, and we have certainly met our targets there. We've also rolled out more electricity connections. The number of 2,000 may seem small in a city this size, but what you've got to appreciate is that most of the growth areas and many of the informal settlements lie in the ESCOM supply area and not in the city supply area. This is only the numbers in our own supply area. So we also support a lot of ESCOM in the rolling out of further electrification, because for us, achieving 100% electrification must be the objective for many. So we also, over 99% of our informal settlements are receiving door-to-door resident collection, and obviously all the formal areas get refuse collection as well. We continue to roll out water points and many new sanitation service points. Sanitation is the most difficult issue for us. Given the topography of many areas, we're particularly informal settlements that located themselves on land that's not conducive to servicing, where it's very dense. So it takes quite a lot of effort to resolve. But we do understand there are areas we still have to improve. National Treasury mentioned our difficulty around housing. And there, that's an area we really admit we have not achieved what we would want to have achieved. And those particularly driving those housing projects where we have the greatest difficulty in delivery on the ground, from contractors, interference from community. Very often it's with such massive contestation on the ground between people. So who should be getting the houses? There's contestation over who should be getting the jobs of construction. There's so many issues of contestation that require considerable effort. And very often our contractors are, the violence becomes first severe, contractors are forced to withdraw from the site. So we have to put a lot of effort into the future to ensure that we try and reduce these kind of problems in the living. So, overall, the IDP, the last 5 years, we categorized under five strategic focus areas. We called our five pillars: opportunity city, trade city, caring city, inclusive city, well-run city. And in that 5 year term of office plan, we had 294 initiatives that we had set up that we wanted to achieve in the 5 years. So this was the result now, with 5 months to go left in the 5 year term, overall we've achieved 98% of those objectives that we set ourselves. So there's only 1.6% left to deliver, and we still have 5 months, so we are determined to achieve that risk. To ensure that we fully deliver on the 5 year IDP. So that's a snapshot of the past up till now. So going forward, we obviously, as I said, are in the process of developing our new IDP, or the new term of office. I will give some more in a moment on that. But strongly linked to the new IDP is our organizational development transformation plan. We are looking at, again, this is a requirement in terms of the Structures Act and the Systems Act, that council should be doing this at the beginning of the term of office, looking at the organization framework, how to structure the organization to deliver on what we say in our IDP. This time around, we decided on a very substantial reorganization of the city organization to deliver. We believe that we need to make significant moves in order to get better coordination within the city, across all the different interests that we have to drive. So we set ourselves 11 transformational priorities that guide both the IDP and this new organization. I'm afraid they've not come up very clearly on the screen here, but
you know, just gone through them. It's excellent in basic service delivery. Mainstream in basic service delivery to informal settlements and back to on the grid. Safe community. Dense and transit-orientated urban growth and development. This is really the key thrust we are wanting to drive to change our city from the apartheid land use model, which is a low-density, long commuter distance model. That's essentially the practicalities of what that model left us with. So we've got to drive densification, we've got to improve the public transport significantly so that we get better operation of the city so that it's better for the people that live here. So they can get to their work, get to their school, get to whatever they need to get to easily and efficiently. So that needs an efficient integrated transport system, and we've got to leverage technology for progress. So rolling out a broadband system. We already have over 700 kilometers of broadband fiber in this lane that the city owns. That's separate to what the private sector is doing. And so we also then want to position Cape Town as a forward-looking global competitive business. You know, we don't want to just be seen as a place people come on holiday. It's a great place to come on holiday. But we're not just a tourist trip. We are a place, an important place for doing business as well. Obviously resource efficiency and security. We are, I think, all aware of the energy issues in this country and internationally. The issues around water, which are really highlighted at the moment. These resource issues are critical for the future of our people. So it's important that as a city we pay a lot of attention to ensuring the security of supply going forward. We then want to build integrated communities. You just have to move away from the boxes and people that do to find each other. So we must positively look at it. Nothing to talk about. Economic inclusion. So that everyone feels they're part of the city, that they're not forgotten, they're sitting out somewhere in formal settlement where they're not included in the economic progress that we are wanting to drive here. And finally, then operational sustainability. The city must, both as a municipality, must be sustainable, and the whole city of 4 million people that live here. And how it hard works, how the economy works, must be sustainable going forward. So the organizational development plan, the agency, we believe we set ourselves these points that listed there to ensure that we have a really good organization going forward. To deliver on all of these objectives that we need. So some of the changes we've made, in our organization is to strengthen the focus on service directors and then to match that with a four area model of position. So we've combined together a lot of the different departments together we believe in a much stronger way to get better coordination. And so we have essentially an energy and electricity department, so it's not just electricity, it's looking at energy in totality. Our transport, human settlements, together with spatial planning, we put together in the Transport Development Authority, so that we now look at the entire spatial operation, including transport, in a unified way. And then all our social services we pull together into one, a really large department, again to achieve cross-pollination, and so that when we deal with that issue, we don't just deal with the policing on that issue, or we don't just deal with the social issues that go around that, but that we look at that both and more, all the kind of responses in a unified way.
finally, our utilities together. And then the area model is then to ensure that we also have to look from an area perspective over site in terms of the functioning of these service delivery departments, that the area organization of the city is also better engages with people, better engages with all the issues we have to address them, that we can, in the end, when we deliver on the ground, people know what we are delivering, why we're delivering it, and that there's better cooperation with the community. Thank you. So finally, Mr. Chair, I was asked to speak on the local economic development strategy of the city. So our economic growth strategy, as we call it, is a subsector of the IDP. The IDP is the overall strategy for the city, and we have in detail pulled out certain aspects, the social development strategy, the economic growth strategy, where we deal with these issues in much greater detail. So I'm just going to briefly take you through our economic growth strategy, because I think that's what informs our approach to local economic development. So, broadly, we have five objectives that we set for the economic growth strategy. This essentially is building the platform for the economy to operate. And I think the government is there to create the platform for which the private sector can drive growth. So you'll see the first one, which is building an enabling institutional and regulatory environment. We have to ensure that, for example, all our bylaws are drafted in a way that they're enabling and not just controlling, that they are assisting people to achieve economic growth. We have to put the right infrastructure in, and that's where we agree with National Treasury that there must be significant infrastructure growth. There's got to be the right ones in the right places so that we maximize the economic growth, and that we also achieve in the same time the change of this land use footprint. Thirdly, is promoting economic inclusion and job creation and skills. Skills development is an absolutely important issue, because that's what's holding back a lot of economic growth, because the mismatch between the skills that people have and the opportunities that are there. And we've got to do a lot to correct that. Then we must promote our particular business sectors, and then we have to ensure that we have an environment that is sustainable growth on. Next slide, please. So for each of these five strategies, we have developed further objectives. Next, please. So on the first one of institutional and regulatory change, we have a number of key strategies there. So develop a consolidated one-stop shop model, roll out the citywide business incentives program, for example, as we already have operating in Atlantis at this moment. To enhance business clusters through special purposes. So, for example, the back office processing business, call centers, which is a booming industry for us, and so we play a role in trying to enhance those particular clusters to ensure that we become the place where this all happens. And then to accelerate our regulatory modernization. So, as I said, make sure our bylaws are not controlling, but are facilitating, that our land use planning legislation is again assisting with the growth, not holding it back. Next, please. The infrastructure. So we've got to leverage all those underutilized city assets to maximize our economic opportunities. And
Again, our international consultation hubs are critical, so both the port and the airport, we have to ensure that we coordinate well with the SOEs that control them, to ensure that we get what we want. For example, we're working together with AXA for the expansion of Cape Town International Airport. Next. So under inclusive growth, we are driving coordination of local development programs for the informal sector. We have to again look at ensuring people at every economic level, I can do it that way, in our city, is part of the result. We don't just drive something that only some people benefit from, but everyone. That's why we say inclusive growth is an issue. Trade and promotion sector, again, there's a whole range of things we're looking at there, such as looking at our grant allocations, the money that we give out, are we effectively achieving the results that we set ourselves for? If we're not just giving to an organization, we'll always gave money to that. So finally, on sustainable growth, we have to ensure that we drive a comprehensive green economy. So really strongly embedded in our programs around electricity, for example, is the shift to renewables. We're working together with the provincial government, approaching the Minister of Energy around bringing gas supplies into the Western Cape to Saldana, and these together with renewables will help significantly improve our carbon footprint, and also we believe we need a much more sustainable growth on energy supply going forward. And water, again, we have to ensure that we have a sustainable program there. Of not just the surface water supply that we rely on at the moment, but that we have a greater reliance on different kinds of sources of water supply. Whether it's groundwater, and eventually we'll have to move to desalination as well, once we follow the energy. So, in brief, Mr. Chair, that's my question.
Are there anyone in your team speaking to the budget?
Mr. Chair, as I said, that we were not briefed to come here and speak on the budget. That was not in the letter we received. That is why I addressed the matters up front.
Your municipal manager present and your CFO?
They're not present, but I'm willing to handle any of the questions that might come on that matter.
Right. Well, thank you for your presentation. It's a bit difficult to measure things, but we will grapple with that. In the presentation by the 12 National Treasury, there was reference made to the human settlement grant expenditure of only 30%. I made note. All the members must now go back to the provincial and national treasury's presentation, which has figures. Honourable Member, the City of Cape Town receives from the National Treasury a grant called the Urban Settlement Development Grant in terms of the Division of Revenue 2016 of 1.423 billion rand. A Labour Development Partnership grant of 12.2 million rand. EPWP integrated program of 31.7 million rand. To the Honourable Executive Deputy Mayor, Cape Town, the Cape Flats, have a problem that is inherited, a challenge that's inherited for many, many, many years, and that's flooding in winter. What is the city of Cape Town doing to enhance the living conditions of those people in an area that's lower than sea level? We have to look what is done in Holland, because there is a whole of Holland below sea level. That's point one, that's my question. One was settlement grant, 30% spending, and coming now to the Cape Flats issue. Thirdly, special development, the thinking of the city of Cape Town. Expansion, go to Kraaifontein, you're bordering on agricultural land. To drive on the west coast, the R27 has open land lying there, to Atlantis. This side you've got the Indian Atlantic Ocean. What is your vision? Because more people are coming to this area of traffic. That's reality. Sedgefield is a small town on the south coast. They desalinizing water for many years, about 5 or 6 years. I got the documentation from the municipal manager, and I sent it to my municipal manager at Rechtersveld Municipality 5 years ago. And we're going that route with the National Department of Water and Sanitation, as well as the National Treasury and Coffee. Yesterday there was a meeting in Port North about this matter, engaging with also DTI. And I believe that the city of Cape Town and our coastal areas will have to speed up their programs looking at additional water resources. The sooner the better. The Minister of Water and Sanitation made a statement, I think it was end of October, beginning November, in Parliament regarding this route to take. Because our people need decent water to drink. That is very crucial. Just as an entree, honourable members, questions from your side. Hold on, Mr. Shipping. Number one. Number two, as we recognize the honourable Gaila from the Eastern Cape. He came a bit late. I know Mtata is very far from Cape Town. And welcome. Honourable Gaila, you are number two. Honourable Motara, did you put up your hand? Honourable Motara is from Gauteng, Economic Outlook of Africa. Any other member? You may respond. Put your questions. Number one, two, no. Three.
No, thanks, Chair. First, I must start by welcoming the presentation. And also appreciate the fact that the city of Cape Town has bought the type of audit opinion that they have received. It shows that South Africans in one province and in many other provinces are doing very well, and probably South Africans we are doing very well. Now, Chair, given such a doubt, a presentation was given for us by National Treasury and the provincial treasurer. And my recollection of fact is that there was, because I participated, and I took a serious exception to what the honorable member said when he started. I was not with what questions that I asked were particularly with reference to the slides that we presented. Whatever topic was given, when it goes, it's okay. But I think we were specific to issues that were raised by the president. I wanted to correct that. I needed that. Chair, in the alignment of your IDP and your NDP, these are broad phrases. That is a broad phrase, as much as the IDP, but then, if you align, you do so by looking at your predetermined objectives to say, what is it that is measurable that we are going to achieve based on what the IDP is saying and what we have aligned? You are turning it into programs and projects. And it is the only way that we can measure the success or failure of whatever is being implemented, the implementation part of it. Because from what I have looked into is that most things were implemented which were not actually measurable. Now, Chair, you would also agree with me. It's an observation that I have made. That if you say you have achieved, for example, the process for me, 86% or 83% success rate, 86% of what? What is it that guides this committee to say, indeed, you have achieved 86 in terms of what you had planned, budgeted? Because it, most of the figures that they presented are given to us, 2,296 electrification. 2,296 of what that has to be delivered. And to say that it is accessible. I'm not sure if you get what I'm trying to say. It gives us an opportunity as a committee to be able to measure as to why you say you have achieved 86%. Now, in the absence of that, we are left to say, yes, indeed, it may be 86, but we don't know of what. Now, in your economic growth strategy, I must not read much into what you are alluding to. If you can go back to that slide, the point that I want to make, because it may not be clearer when I explain it. I have not written anything, but you know, I just looked at it. You are from time to time in your five priorities or whatever, you are saying, keep calm. In my understanding, I'm not sure, you are there to take the city, or is it how you trust the city of Cape Town, which is all inclusive. But when you say Cape Town, to me it says and it gives me another interpretation of it. That you are referring to Cape Town as a town. If you can go, I know that it will be very difficult. But if we can go to that slide in terms of your local economic growth strategy that you were referring to, the reference is made to Cape Town, not the city of Cape Town. Now, if it is the thing, rest assured that I'm covered with that. Maybe it's an omission of city. But you would understand that seated here and being a South African citizen, and another person reads that presentation that was given to us, may have a different interpretation. But I know that that will arrive at the only one interpretation. Thank you very much.
Yeah, the honourable members more or less covered me on some issues.
Really?
However, just a point of clarity. On your EPWP funding, what is it that, what do you have any projects that addresses poverty in places like those that are for these gang-related problems and drug-related problems? Are there any programs to address that? Because you'll find that mostly it's the youth that are involved with these gang-related issues. Now, what is the that the city is doing to take them away from these drugs and these gangs? Are there any projects to do to make it better? And secondly, every year, there is a problem of flooding in the central city, but there's also a problem of the informal settlement fire. It's every year. Then there's a problem of fires every year. What is it that you are doing? Because most of those fires, there are people who die. What is it that the city is doing to try and resolve that problem? And lastly, Jefferson, a gentleman, I came in on a gentleman was presenting from Bath, but he touched on a very interesting from treasure and you know, for treasure. Okay. No, no. That man is dead.
What a niche with your question?
No. I thought it was but let me fight into treasure. Maybe they can take the message to because they spoke about service providers who owe them money that they don't pay. That's where I must get to. Is that there are quite a lot of service providers who owe far traders money. Now, the trick of not paying is that somebody owes you 600,000 and it's got a payment of 800,000. Now, would you be prepared to negotiate? Because I know most of the small commercial sectors, the second by that. Whether it is feasible to you so that you take your money as he tells you, then you give him that so you can go on to the national community. And that's where I want to get to. Thank you.
Done?
Yes.
Number three.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair. Honorable member indicated that they want to focus more on informal settlements, but the problem is that most of the informal settlements are not for service for basic service delivery. My question to the honorable member there is, what is their plan to make sure that people that are in informal settlements get a basic service delivery?
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair, I'll first turn to the comments that you made, particularly around flooding, for example, on the Cape Town. Now, I think let's first understand the actual situation. The Cape Pass is actually 20 metres above sea level. It's not an issue of being below sea level. The issue is rather different than that is before humans settled on the Cape Pass, it was an area of sand dunes where there was no natural drainage. So what happened was rain would fall and sit between the sand dunes and either soak away or get evaporated. That's the natural. There was no drainage, there were no rivers. What we now know is the Lotus River never existed in the past. It's something that was built by human beings.
And same with Altish Kral River. Some of the whole of all those rivers on the Cape Coast are human constructed drainage channels. So I mean, what we've done dunes, we go and we level the dunes and we built our township and then we create this drainage to the sea. The problem is the way that the Cape Flats develops, the direction it develops in, is those initial channels that were constructed were hopelessly undersized for the ultimate development of the whole of the catchment. That's the broad problem. So the Lotus River, you know, was great for a little bit of development in the 1950s and 60s, but not for what we have today. So we had to go back afterwards and, you know, enlarge all of these drainage systems to cope with the increased runoff that's taken place because of development. The difficulty around informal settlement is that in most cases people don't settle on these dunes without what really needs to happen first, which is to shape the land. You need to first go flatten the sand dunes and make sure it's got a proper drainage path, that there are channels created. And that's what people didn't do when they create informal settlement, because then that's just what happened. So for us to fix the situation is that we have to create these drainage channels. Now it's really difficult when the property is full of traps. What do you do? So what you've got to do is you actually got to move everyone off. You've got to go and shape the land and you've got to put them back in a much more sensible way that's got proper drainage paths, that's got you know, spaces between the houses that people build so that you can service properly. And this also comes back to the honourable member's question around the fires, that, you know, by creating part of the problem in formal settlements when there are fires is that because they're so on top of each other, once one shack goes, the rest goes. Particularly in our dry summers where the wind is blowing, you know, can be in 15 minutes, you can burn the whole lot out. But by creating space between everyone, you can reduce that. And you say also further on the fire issue is that what we've also done, so we call that process re-blocking an informal setting. In terms of re-blocking it, we've also been experimenting with issues such as fire and carbon tanks. That you paint these shacks with fire carbon paint, so when a fire does get going, it takes much longer to burn through those first shacks. So you have enough time for the fire service to respond and get there before the whole place is burnt out. So I think if you compare today, when we have a flooding situation in winter, so how many people are displaced is a very small number compared to what it was 10 years ago. We have significantly increased the drainage circumstances throughout the country. Not perfect, there are some areas that are still very difficult. We've not solved the problem, but we'll keep at that. And it's also important that we get cooperation from the communities in terms of the re-blocking processes that we are wanting to drive so that we can create those better conditions. And that takes, let me tell you, a great deal of communication and effort for people. They're very suspicious always when they ask to move, that they're going to somehow lose out. And one really understands that, but it does create a difficulty in achieving the results you want. Mr. Chair, the city has grown at the edges, but it's something we want to turn around. We do not want to continue the growth of the footprint of the city. Because if we are to turn around the apartheid land use model, we've got to get densification within the existing footprint. Also, in order to ensure that our public transport systems are viable going forward, we need there to be shorter distances for people to travel. need more feet in your public transport system on a particular route to ensure there's enough income to make this a sustainable system. So we have to move away from this constantly putting new developments at the edge of it. We've got to internalize it. So, you know, places like Lunga, for example, is now dead centered in the middle of our city. Look at a map of the city, Lunga is the center. And, you know, it's places like that where we have got to build high density. And that's what we're doing. We are demolishing the old hostels and we're putting up lots of flats. This is the kind of solution we have to go to if we are to get a far more suitable land use system in the city rather than growing up at the edge. So, you also addressed, Mr. Chairman, the issue of water. Well, we say that this is where we work together with the Department of Water Affairs and Sanitation. There is a Western Cape water systems analysis of long standing. It's got a great deal of detail, and there's a whole range of projects where it's determined what's going to happen next. The next big one needs to be the increase in the size of Cool Bay Dam, where during winter periods we pump more water, river from the Berger, into Cool Bay Dam. So this is all run as a single system. Cape Town only takes about 40% of the water from that. Others are taken by other municipalities, by agriculture and so on. And of course evaporation takes up about 20%. And it's also then believed that beyond that, the next major source we need to go to is groundwater in what is called the Table Mountain Sandstone Series. It's not just Table Mountain, it's all these mountains across the whole belt of the Cape, where we'd be looking at something like 100 meter deep wells into those to tap on a very, very large source of water supply. And then desalination is the one that I think. Desalination is a very, very expensive option. Its operational costs, very high energy costs, are not yet prohibitive, but they will require significant increases in our water tariffs. So we need to look at all these other alternatives first that are much more affordable. But in time, you're quite correct, we would have to go there. Once the population of the city gets to a certain level, that's going to be absolutely essential. Honourable Member's question around the, it says, 80% of what? Good question. In our whole IDP, we have mapped into a corporate scorecard. I did not present that today, but that is available in significant detail, where we have a whole range of measures of objectives and measurements. And that's what the AG measures when he determines the predetermined objectives. And because we have 4 years of clean orders, which means the AG believes that, first of all, as he says in his audit opinion, the PDOs are both accurately reported on and credible. That is available, and we can make that available to you, should you so. I think, yes, the use of the term Cape Town, when we use that, we mean the whole city of Cape Town. That's the way we want to talk about this part of the city. We refer to the CBD, or we say the city bowl area. But when we say Cape Town, we don't just mean this little bit. We mean the whole city. And that's just the shorthand we use. The question around EPWP, I forget the precise numbers, but I think National Treasury gives a of the order around 20 million a year for EPWP. We spend 200 million a year on EPWP. But from our own sources, we put significant amounts of money in this world. And we drive EPWP projects across the board. We've looked everywhere. It's not just, you know, the traditional things of here in the river or cutting down bush or digging trenches or whatever, you know, which are more useful, but in the end we need much broader use of workers. So we've even found ways in the administration, assisting, for example, in the property management department, people getting jobs there for a few months to come and do a particular project. Assisting in our revenue collection department. So we found broader use of ways of using the whole EPWP concept throughout our administration. And it is very much focused on ensuring that that poor people who just do not have an income get some source of income. And that's the direct way of addressing poverty issues. We also seek where these programs make it possible to provide training as well. If the person just gets something to do and to start, then they go away and they're not actually learning anything, they can't actually move on in life. We've actually got to assist them to get to the next step. Honourable Member's question around drugs and gangs, well, this is crucial for us here in the Western Cape, in Cape Town particularly. So, although gangs is really a SAPS responsibility, we have a whole range of initiatives. We have school resource officers that we work together with the provincial government, which are also safety officers, ensuring the safety of the schools. We have a whole lot of family intervention initiatives. If you might remember, the mayor this past few years very, very strongly drove anti-drug message. You even saw the mayor on the side of bus stops saying, I have a drug problem. Not that I take drugs, but I have, you know, I've got a drug problem because there are drug people out there that are affecting my life. So we have programs that focus on drug use. We have programs that focus on the community around it. We have programs that focus on the family of drug use. So we've been rolling out matrix clinics here across the city, which is this program to assist drug takers. And so there's a whole lot of other programs that we drive. It's something that's very serious to us. I mean, if the mayor has taken a personal position driving it, which we believe very strongly, that needs to be dealt with. And the whole issue around gangs, too, we have looked to have disruptors within these gang communities to stop whenever some gang activity starts, that people go there and disrupt this action between the gangs and put them into it. So we could speak more on that, but I just assure you that for us that's very, very clear. The member spoke about SARS. But let me just say that in terms of our FGM process, not just we require that people's payment to the city is up to date, they also have to have a tax clearance certificate from SARS. And must be up to date before they can get a contract from the city as well. I mean, that's national legislation, and you know that we implement that too. The chairman, the member's question around the informal settlement services. Well, I've already described some of that work of trying to solve the drainage issues, the weed blocking, which enable us to service these communities better. We currently, all informal settlements have water supply to the national minimum standards and better. We increasingly roll out sanitation services. Sanitation also at this moment in time meets the national minimum standards, but we're not satisfied with that. We are looking to improve those. So we have a range of things from we prefer where we are able to re-block, for example, reshape the land that we can put in
flush toilet, because that is by far the best way and in the long term the cheapest way to service, to provide sanitation services. But where we can't, we provide chemical toilets at the edges of settlements. And also we've rolled out several hundred thousand of what are called I think the formal name, but you know in the sporting body. Essentially they are portable flush toilets. Essentially you take inside your shack and you use there and it flushes into a container, and this is serviced I think it's three times a week. I'm subject to direction on that, but where you then put the container outside, people come and replace it with a clean container. And that used container is taken when it is charged into the sewage field. And that's become very popular for those areas that we could not service better. But Mr. Chair, we would far prefer to move towards full flush toilets because that is the best solution. And we continue to work towards that. Thank you.
Honourable Member, I believe that our engagement don't end today. I believe that there's a necessity that we look at our program, the staff must assist, that we do site visits within the metro, referring to what was presented to us, and then after that call back the team that we engage further. We have a program tomorrow and Thursday outside the metro in Saldana regarding economic development. Also that when we have another engagement with the city of Cape Town, that the municipal manager and the chief financial officer is also present, because it forms part of the Troika in terms of the Municipal Finance Management Act. Co-responsibility and accountability. Are there any questions that members want to ask? In that case, I thank our presenters, Treasury, National and Provincial, and the team from the Metro for your presentation. We will notify you of further engagement. Thank you very much. And we wish you a lovely day further. The sun is shining. I'm looking forward for more rain and dams can be filled. When you drive past the St. William Dam, it's a pleasure to see water. Yes, and the irrigation system. Honourable members, that concludes this part of today's session, the Select Committee on Finance. On Friday morning, 9 o'clock, very important meeting of the Select Committee on Finance, engaging with the Financial Sector Regulation Bill from 9 until about 12:30, and then we will take it from there. Mr. Rento distributed the bill. It's quite a thick document. I proposed to all the members work through it. It took me 3 days to work through it. I made my own summary and the presentation of the National Treasury was next to me. And it's quite an exercise to go through, and you can learn from that exercise. Coming to the meeting very well prepared on Friday. And then, Honourable Member, Fundi, today is Fundi's last day in Parliament as a researcher. From tomorrow, Fundi is academic. She's going to study further. She sent us all an email saying goodbye. I told her, come to the meeting, we want to wave you goodbye. And put you on the road into the future, and one day we will call you Dr. Fundi, when you obtain your PhD. So as committee, we wish you very well. for the way you approach your work and become more proficient. You are, but we are all of us. It's a lesson that we can take. To be more professional, to do the best. Because the people out there expect the best and take quality decisions. So we wish you well and thank you for your service to Balam. And also convey this message to your loved ones as well. Thank you. Do you want to have a word?
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. It's been a pleasure for me to work for Parliament and serve my country the best way that I could in the legislative sector. And I'd like to thank you, Chairperson, for challenging me, for pushing me, and expecting the best from me. I've really grown working with you in the committee. And I'd like to thank the members of the committee for, can I be listening to you? I'd like to thank the members of the committee for being themselves, for being dedicated, for being focused, for working hard, but in the process for being humane. And I think that was, it's the main thing. Like, we work with, on the Limpopo intervention, you are dedicated, you are committed, you are focused and humane. Even if you are in Mexico, you continue to be humane, you treat us well as staff, with respect. And we thank you for that. I think we are fortunate to have members like you. And I hope when you climb that ladder in the political party, you do not change and remain in it. And to my fellow colleagues, honorable support staff, guys, I will miss you a lot. I've learned a lot and I've grown working with you. I'm not saying 4 years back, I'm not saying. I've really grown working with the Committee on Finance. And thank you. It's time to move on and see what I can do. More with my life and what I can contribute to the world. Thank you.
Honourable members, that concludes the business of the Select Committee for Finance. We suspend the proceedings until 1 o'clock when the Select Committee for Appropriation will proceed with their program. Thank you. Matches outside.